Ah, yes. I do remember that. That was right. At the inauguration, no?
Yeah.
Inauguration. Yeah.
Inauguration. Inauguration.
Those big words hurt Gordon's mind. We're going to set it off. Time to step inside. Well, everything comes down to the dice. A table of friends in a DM. In a radical, magical fantasy land. In a radical, magical fantasy land. Set it off. Here we all feel free.
Welcome to the show.
It is going on, everybody.
Wait, are we good? Are we synced?
I felt like Adam clapped like 2 seconds before everyone else.
Oh, it's probably a leg issue, but I think
clapped when the counting was going.
That's probably the best editor in the game.
3D1 and hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Yeah. My name's Adam. Yeah. And, welcome to the Down to the Dice, the live play D&D podcast, edition 5.5, the podcast live play D&D podcast, where every single thing that happens is up to the players. And down to the dice. Yes, very good. Man, we are just feeling a mile high right now because the show ended on a pretty suspenseful part. But before we get into that, let's do a couple quick announcements and, of course, introduce our amazing cast. I'm Adam. You already know that. I'll be your DM and host for this evening. Let's get to it. Also, first of all, keep that in. We want people to know how dedicated we are to this platform, because even though we're sick, a lot of us are under the weather. Maybe you guys listening back at home, in your cars, with your kids, with your cats, with your dogs, maybe you guys are feeling this too. And we are still here to record because we love the show and we love you. So I'm hoping that this like frog in my throat will add more weight to every single thing I say. All right. Introducing the cast. Ryan Tunney.
Hey, it's Goran. Still pending. Your orc.
Woohoo. He is struggling with a cold right now.
You know what, Ryan? You used to say he was lovable, but that has stopped. So
today he's likable today.
All right. No one will ever take away what we have, Goran.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. Next but not least, Daniel, okay? You look stressed out there.
My stupid note-taking app is strangleholding me. Now it's like, "Oh, you got to pay to add more notes." It's like,
oh. Yeah.
If only you had a notebook that let you jump twice as far, man. That's what you need.
Nice. Okay, next but not least, we have Alexander Anderson.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, or good day, or hi, everybody. It's Aven Shadowborn here to kick some ass and save Beethoven yet again.
And I don't think the recording quality is going to get better than that. That was top notch. Okay, now we have Jake Joseph on the mic.
What's going on, guys? I play Sean Dugoni, your tiefling druid with a chthonic background.
And our amazing player who is struggling with his note-taking app, we have Dan Summer.
Conroy, Kane, Ardling, Rogue. He's a bat, too.
Nice.
Yeah, wings.
And if you just happen to be hopping in, you might have learned that, yes, we are playing playtest material. And one of the changes that happened in this playtest material is that Ardlings shouldn't exist anymore, because apparently, things are going on. But we live in this playtest material where we say things are going to change and we're going to subscribe to the rules as much as possible, except we're too far in to take away an entire species in this game.
Conroy wakes up one day.
Agreed.
And he's like, "I feel alone. Where's you know what,
Dan? I'll just warn you: don't open any like magical potions that you are not labeled, because it will change your race, and it'll change every race of your species, and then you'll just
wipe your
genocide basically
that way. Okay, so before we get going, we just have a couple announcements for everyone, and these announcements are going to be a lot simpler than the announcements that we usually give, mostly just because our announcements rarely change. And if you ever want to know what those are, of course, you can go back and listen to another episode. And it's mostly just asking, hey, if you like the show, you can always support us by telling a friend or a family member, recommending the podcast to someone else. The word of mouth helps us out a lot. Also, leaving a 5-star review. And of course, our Patreon, you can learn more about that in the show notes and everything like that. But we have a big announcement coming up, and The announcement today is that there is a huge announcement coming out next episode, which will be 2 weeks from now, and we cannot wait to share it with you guys. It has to do with a giveaway. In fact, 12 giveaways. We're very, very, very excited about it, and if you want to have a chance to be in that giveaway, we're going to have all the information included in next week's episode. We really want to share it now, except that not all the details are done yet, but we are working on it, so just get really ready to take notes next episode. Besides that, can't wait. On with the rest of the show. Okay, and let's just get into a recap. Ryan, give me my DMs in.
Dr. Grace.
He tried, guys. Everyone give our DM a hand, guys. Guys, he's doing great. Wow. He's doing awesome. You rock this, Adam. You go, man.
We last left our party catching their breath on the top of their skyship after surviving a bandit slash pirate attack. Goran, Shran, Avon, Conroy, all of you guys were at separate posts. Conroy and Avon, you guys were keeping watch and steering the ship. Shran and Goran, you guys were taking a nap as you guys were taking your long rest. Then Beethoven and Istrabel were also asleep. When Conroy, because of your tremor sense that we gave you, you were able to tell that, hey, someone is picking a lock somewhere on this ship. So you went down, you found someone breaking into the hull of the ship. Avon, you saw someone attacking on top of the ship. You kicked the alarm bell and alarmed everybody, and you guys found out someone was trying to kidnap Istrabel in the midst of all this chaos. Luckily, you guys were able to stop them, and you guys were able to basically get rid of all the other bandits except for one that managed to escape, and you basically killed the rest of them except for the last one, where you still have them tied up downstairs in Istrabel and Beethoven's room, where they are hogtied waiting for whatever it is that you're going to do with them. But now you are all on the top of the ship catching your breath as the last of the sky pirates fled away. Conroy, you managed to just land and you said a sick line, which was, well, that wasn't very discreet. You all stand there catching your breath. Shran, Avon, Goran, and Conroy Kane. What happens next is up to you and down to the dice.
What do you guys do?
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Avon's going to check on Beethoven to make sure he's not dying again.
That's right. Okay. He was wounded, I think. No, he had someone else's blood, I think.
He is not there. As you turn around, you can see that he's not on the deck with you. Intuition tells you that he would probably have stayed behind to make
with
sure that Istro was
Istrabel,
okay.
Yeah. So Avon sort of gestures to the guys like, I'm going downstairs. I'm going to go check on the Night Havens.
The Night Grounds?
Night Grounds.
The Night Havens.
We're going to get it one day.
It's like an alternate universe.
That's another rival family.
Yeah. We haven't met them yet.
We're the Night Havens.
The Night...
Okay, what else happens?
While he does that, I'll make sure that Goran stays with the hog tie, with the guys tied up, just so no funny business happens.
Okay, so as you just got up here, you look around, they're all gone.
I left them downstairs. Wait, is it the guy from the...
So last episode, you found this gnome. You utterly destroyed him another guy. You hogtied them alive. But what Conroy saw that maybe you didn't see is that the guy that got away, he had tried to put those two captives on his ship before getting away. And they actually fell off the ship and they plummeted down to the core miles below.
God, I didn't want that. But what about the barbarian, or not the barbarian, the dwarf that was trying to steal Istrabel?
He's hogtied downstairs with Beethoven and Istrabel in the bottom floor.
In Istrabel's room, my bad.
That's where I thought I was.
No, you ran up to the deck.
Okay, I'm going to go downstairs just to check on him then.
Okay, so you follow right after Avon, who's going to check on Istrabel. So Avon, you're going to check on Istrabel. Goran, you're going to the same place, but you're there. You're going to check out that prisoner that you just hogtied.
Well, I'm going to make sure Istrabel's okay too, because that might have been pretty traumatic for her. And then, yeah, just to make sure he's still there.
Okay.
As Shran watches Avon and Goran shuffle down the stairs through the doorway, I come out of my wild shape with one knee and one hand on the deck, and I slowly rise up to my feet and I look at Conroy, still catching my breath. You all right, mate?
I have a few scratches, but all in all, I'm pretty good, I suppose.
I take a step toward you, Conroy, and I just gesture as if I'm going to look you over, but I don't actually touch you. Because I respect your space. And I say, yeah, you took a licking, but I don't know where it'd be if it wasn't for you, mate. I could use a drink. You wanna grab one?
We haven't cracked open this blood wine yet. I mean, I guess now's as good a time as any.
You do hear someone near you clear their throat. Hey, listen. And then you look over the cultist that's hanging there. He says, man, some wine sure sounds good right about now.
I look over my shoulder at the cultists and I say, did you know those guys, mate?
Those bandits? Nah, you guys just have the worst luck.
I approach them and I, Henry Cavill style, kind of recharge my fists. A little more subtly, you know. And I just say, I'm sure you got a lot of friends though, right? Eyes everywhere? Hey, you're man. Not keeping anything from me, eh?
Tiefling dude, this is all above my pay grade.
I lean in close.
Garlic, huh? Unfortunate choice.
And I say, listen, mate, they're not after you. You know that. The only reason you're here is because you're not talking. Who's your leader?
You know what? He takes a moment, and looking around, he recognizes the company he's in. That Avon and Gorin are not there. And he says,
you know what? You got a point. Listen, I'm a small fry. If you let me go, I'll tell you everything I know. You don't happen to have a spare sky raft on here, I could make a getaway.
I turn my head just enough to double check that Conroy is still with me.
Yeah, I would have kind of stayed around, maybe not be right there with the cultists, but kind of just like, I don't know, hanging back a few feet.
Okay.
Come on.
Guys, I don't know what to do. I say, I don't think we should leave this guy alone, Connie. How about I watch him and you go get a drink for the both of us?
Well, did you want to try this blood wine?
Do you have it on you?
I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah, I brought my bag with me.
Yeah. You're up keeping watch. It actually makes sense that it would be up here.
You're right. Yep. It's right here. They didn't steal it.
Thank goodness it didn't get broken.
Yeah. I'll take a glass.
Let's see how good this...
So that's a no on the let me go thing?
Let's see how I feel after a drink, mate.
I find glasses somewhere.
Connie, do you leave? Do you leave to get the glasses?
Assuming that there's not any right there, yeah, sure.
When Connie leaves, I lean towards the cultist, and I say, what do you know about Gaia?
Persuasion check.
The cultist asks him to make a persuasion check.
Persuade me.
Do your best.
First rule of the night, guys. I look tenderly into his eyes. Persuasion? Oh, man. 12, DM. Come on, guys.
He's not hard to convince. He is a devout believer. And he says,
Gaia is the mother of all gods. She's what all life comes from. All the other gods stem from her, and she's broken. We need to restore her. And more importantly, if you help her, she'll give you power beyond your wildest dreams.
I mull this over for a second. DM, back in episode 7 or 8, when we were shopping with Beethoven, and there was that protest going on. Those people wanted to sever the chains, right?
Yeah.
Some of the protesters?
Yep.
When that was saying that?
That's like a political religious group. Different than this. They think that the island should be left to float to their natural orbit. This is different. This guy, he's not really implying that.
See, I'm trying to figure out, mate, if you actually got an idea, or if you really just want to see everything fall apart, mate. You know, nature's got an order. And that order is sometimes survival of the fittest.
Such as Gaia's way. You turned into a wolf. That's pretty amazing. You know, that power comes from Gaia.
I stand up abruptly and I say, you don't know that. And I turn around and I go wait for Connie.
Hey, listen, come on.
Oh, sir, you don't know that.
And scene. And, we're going to come back to you guys, but Avon and Gorin, you guys hustle downstairs. What do you guys do?
So Avon.
Okay, so I was going to...
Go ahead.
No, it's okay. Go ahead. It's all right.
I'm kidding. I just want to make, because you sound like you're going to go see Ishtrabel, so I'm just going to go into the room.
Well,
with
I'm going to knock on the door if it's still there.
Okay, so you go down there.
I'm not gonna walk in.
You go down there, and the door is open. This dwarf, captive, knocked out, like drool coming from his mouth onto the floor. He is there, partially blocking the doorway. And behind that, you see Ishtrabel sitting on the bed, wringing her wrists where he had grabbed her. She, like, is rubbing her neck, where you can already see bruises begin to appear from where he must have grabbed her and thrown her a couple times. She is very shaken up, and it's even, especially to you, it is clear that the strong countenance she had had right when you guys had saved her when she left and was just with her brother, she had a little bit of a drop of her guard. You can see fresh tear lines on her face. Beethoven is beside her. He is in his underwear as he had been woken up in the middle of the night. He still has blood from one of the assailants on his chest, and he is rubbing Ishtrabel's back.
There, it's okay. It's okay. You're safe now. We're not going to let anything happen to you, Ishtrabel.
Okay,
surprisingly charming.
So Avon comes in, and
Beethoven looks at the camera and says, "Oh, you don't even know." Sorry, Avon.
Hey, yo. What family is this?
So Avon wants to try and find like a handkerchief or a towel or something that she would have. Like,
yeah, her, she has like, some like on her little dresser.
Just grab one, and I walk up and I crouch down in front of Ishtrabel, and I look at Beethoven.
Beethoven
like,
grabs the napkin and says, "Thanks so much. Wow, what a workout." He starts wiping his forehead with it.
I hold on to the thing before he pulls it away, and I look at him like, "Go get cleaned up and go get dressed, and then come back."
Okay, I'm gonna try to get this dwarf out of here.
I turn to him like, no, Gorin should be down for this one shortly.
I like to think I'm kind of right behind, peeking over.
Okay,
I'll take care of this. I grab the dwarf, and is there like another room I can take this body to?
Conroy's bedroom is like right next door. As you do that, Beethoven steps over the body first, and he taps your shoulder. Gorin, as he passes by, he has to reach up and tap, and he says, "Hey, thanks. You know, we just keep owing you more and more, Gorin. And you too, Avon.
I don't need to thank me. It's for the greater good."
Avon looks over Gorin, and I say, "Maybe you should hang him by his feet in the engineering room so you can see the handiwork that he did in there."
Just as you guys are beginning to discuss strategy, Beethoven begins to run up the stairs. He's in his boxers. This is a different pair than what he had last time, but you can see they're white, and on the back in bright letters on right on the butt area, it says "Ranger Danger," and he runs up the stairs.
I'm just glad you weren't going to say like "Juicy" or something like that. Thank you.
That's what we want to see. That's his other pair.
That's his other pair. Okay.
Don't worry. We got a whole podcast. We're going to see them all. All right. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you guys.
So Avon crouches down in front of Ishtrabel. I kind of pull her hands from her face as she's crying and like trying to pull away the tears. I put the handkerchief in her hand forcefully, and I'm like, and I try to look at her, and I try to, you know, eye contact with her, and "You are important. We're going to get you home. You're going to be safe."
Persuasion check.
Come on, Olek. Let's go, man. Come on. Olek.
That's actually really great, because that's a natural 20.
Olek, you just earned David a point of inspiration, my friend.
Hey, nice. Let's
go, Olek.
You see her eyes, her bright brown eyes shining with tears. They re-glisten, and tears just spill out onto those cherubim cheeks. But then she brushes her arm across, and she smears them away, and she says, "Something's going on with my family." And then she just gets like this look of surprising anger in her eyes, and she says,
No.
"We're gonna find out who." Avon, you feel a slight tremor in the ship.
Oh, man.
Probably just turbulence. And she stands up and she says, "We gotta get some information out of this guy."
So she stands up and
hey, Gorin, stop taking him away. We gotta talk to him.
I have a plan, the wrestle like across the abdomen, and I force her back down onto the bed. Like, not down onto the bed, like sitting back on the bed.
Gorin, what are you doing with this dwarf?
I pick him up by the rope, and as she says that, I just turn and walking down the hall, just say, "I'll get it out of him." And I'm just gonna take him to a separate room.
Okay. You so take him into
nonchalantly. I'll get it out of him.
you take him into Conroy's room.
Hey.
And yeah, Aven, sorry, what were you gonna do?
Aven's final thought that he just wants to lay down into Istrabel's head is your family is rich, they are powerful, and you are the apex of society. People will always come for you. You just have to stay strong with your family and gather friends and people around you who you can trust.
And she nods subtly, and she stands up straighter. And for a moment, she looks much older, like she is aged like years in a night.
Matured.
As trauma can do. And she says, allies like you four, I really appreciate what you guys have done for us. It'll be rewarded.
Way to go, Oleg. Yeah, get the money on our side.
Aven tries to direct her to the desk to focus on things that she can research now, like the book and stuff that I'd given her and whatnot.
And she rolls her eyes and says, punish me for getting attacked. Schoolwork. Yay. Cut to Conroy. You've just grabbed your two or three glasses.
Three.
Okay. Wooden cups.
Ooh.
You go up to the deck. And Goran, we're going to get to you in a sec. So you walk back up. Tron is sitting on a crate, maybe 10, 15 away from the cultist. The cultist is hanging there looking a little dejected. That's what you see.
I'm going to, yeah, crack open the bottle, uncork it, whatever, pop it off, whatever. I'm going to pour all three glasses. I'm going to go over, give one to Sean and one for myself and kind of raise it and say,
yeah.
To, what should we do? What should we cheers to?
You're asking me that?
Yeah.
Hey, cheers to a hell of an oddling. If it wasn't for you, mate, those guys would have got away and Istra would be gone. And then you and I would have been killed. If you think about that, you saved us all.
And I
down that whole glass, half the glass.
I think you're supposed to sip it.
You get faint notes of wine, but a strong sense of blood as well. There's like that strong irony taste. And Conor, do you drink it as well?
Yeah, I sip it. Then I go with the third glass up to the cultists and it's like, you mentioned you were thirsty. Do you want some?
My hands are tied. I think you're a little too small to give me a drink.
Because he's tied up to a mast above him.
So that's a no?
Well, no, I'm... Hey, well, I actually, no one's really giving me water for a day. I'd love something to drink.
DM, I walk over and I say, got it. And I... May I, Connie?
Yeah, I hand you the...
Thanks. I take the cup and I feed it to the guy.
He drinks it. And one sec.
Here I was hoping you were going to say like, oh, thanks, and you drink it instead.
No,
he crossed my mind.
He drinks it and barely spills a drop.
All right.
Thank you.
And my smile returns to me, and I turn to, and I kind of have a glass in both hands, and a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. I decide to at least play it like good spirits are coming back, pardon the pun, and I turn to Connie and I say, I'm not gonna lie, mate, it's been a long time. I don't know if I've ever had blood liquor like this. Is it supposed to taste like that, mate?
No, this isn't the best stuff. But hey, it's the thought that counts. So thanks.
Oh, well, sorry, if you don't like it, you can always... No, it's too late to return it now, fine. I guess.
Yeah, like, it's fine. Like, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right.
Well, wow, fridge magnets. Thanks so much.
So I'll continue to make small talk DM with Connie and I guess what I'm trying to do is try to play nice cop with this guy, with this prisoner we have.
Okay.
And anytime he gestures for a drink, I'll give him one.
Okay. You know what? Over the course of the next few minutes, how about both of you guys roll a persuasion check to see if you guys can curry some kind of favor with this cultist?
Okay.
So decide if you guys are each rolling separately or if you guys are one of you guys is giving inspiration to the other.
Yo, Jacob, looks like you got the sweetest roll.
Okay. Well, Dan, what'd you get?
15? No, not 15. Okay. Sorry. Nope. 11.
Slightly different. And And Tron?
You said persuasion?
Yeah.
18.
18. Yeah. Okay, so you guys actually, you begin to talk the knight away, and against your judgment, you know, that you and the cultists crack the occasional joke, and you learn, hey, like, he has a completely different worldview. His morality and, like, what is required to do the right thing, like, is very different, but you actually make each other chuckle a couple times. We're going to cut. Goran, you have just brought this hog-tied dwarf into an isolated bedroom.
I throw him on the ground. Or is there somewhere he can sit?
There's like a desk that you could prop him on.
Yeah, I'm just carrying him by the rope, kind of like where his elbow would hang. I'm holding him. I throw him on the chair. Does he wake up?
He grumbles, and he kind of tries to right himself up.
I help him. I'll help him so he's sat up and proper, and I'll sit across from him.
I think you're still lovable, Goran.
He's quiet at first when he wakes up. His eyes are open, but he's looking at the ground. You can tell his mind is racing, and then he says, I want to make a deal.
Bet you do. As I say that, I look at him. Does he look like anything like the first cultist we encountered?
No, not at all. This guy has more like bandit, like traditional bandit clothes. He smells like he hasn't showered in a while. The cultists, their uniforms were clean for the most part. Maybe like a little worn, but like they didn't smell dirty. This guy smells like he's been out adventuring, not washed for like days or weeks. He looks like an unruly sort.
Okay, I might not get the information I need, but we'll see. Tell me, are you a religious man?
The only thing I worship is gold.
Well, why not be able to make such a deal?
The one guy on the ship who cannot be bribed.
He looks up at you and he says, are you a religious type?
I don't answer. I reach into my bag and I pull out that Gaia book.
Okay.
I just put it on the table. You know anything about this?
He looks at
him. Yeah, I kind of flipped the pages so he can... I forgot his hands were tied.
He looks at it, side glance, and he says,
no, man, I can't help you. But if you let me go, I can give you information as to who sent us here.
Whoa. Man. What? I can't move any more in my seat than I am now. I'm freaking out.
I was going to say, is there no honor among thieves?
Aven really wishes he was there to join.
And he kind of shrugs in his place and he says, you got our lot figured out. The only thing you can trust about my kind, we want to survive. If I have your word as a holy man that you'll let me go, I'll tell you anything you want to know.
I have no need for your knowledge.
I know you'll serve well in jail.
We'll keep you alive there.
Listen, hold on. Before you walk away, I got information that you could really benefit from.
About?
We were approached and told to come here. That's pretty valuable information, right?
Go on.
I will if you promise me you'll let me live and get away. Throw in the smaller fish for a bigger one?
I mean, where are you going to go? You're floating right now.
Well, once we get to land.
I can promise you a fair trial.
Goran.
You'd get a little more leeway with me if you promised me an unfair trial.
I like this guy more than the cultist.
It's not the way I work.
Listen. I'm listening. Listen. Oh, okay, listen. I only got information to bribe you with, man.
Yeah, I just stand up and I grab him by the arm.
Listen.
No, I have no use for you.
Listen.
Thank you for your time.
No, listen. I start
taking him back to the room where Ishtrabel and Aven were.
No, can Aven join you in there instead?
No, he said he's bringing you out. You're taking this time to be with Ishtrabel.
You'd probably, I don't know how loud he is, but you might be able to hear in the hallway.
As the door opens, you hear, listen, as you hear scraping as he's bringing him into the hallway.
Aven kind of looks over because the door was left open, and he's like, and I kind of want to gesture to Ishtrabel just to wait here. And I walk over to Goran. I'm just like, did he tell you anything? In a hushed tone so she doesn't hear it behind us.
He says, no, but I got information. I got all kinds of information. If you let me go.
I kind of lift him up off his feet.
Listen.
So I can talk to Aven. I say,
You didn't tell me what I needed to know.
Listen.
Promise me whatever he tells you, he sees a fair trial. He's not to be left. He's not to be let go.
I look at him and I'm like, he won't die. Yes, I guarantee it.
No, he will live. He will see trial.
He will live.
Do you promise me, Aven?
I promise you.
Do you promise me?
You can observe and help if need be.
I kind of put the dwarf on his feet and let go. I'll stand watch that door.
So no. I just ask you to stay by the door just so that he can't use it as an escape.
Yeah, I'll stand in the doorway. Like, I'll listen to the conversation, but essentially he just didn't seem to be... He didn't seem like he was going to give me what I needed, so I have no use for him.
We'll stipulate that his hands are tied to his ankles.
And he needs to see trial.
Okay, DM, do we have any health potions on us right now?
They'd be in your bedrooms.
I look to Gorin and I go, do you think you could grab a health potion or two?
I walk up to get a health potion. Oh, friggin'.
as he walks out, I take the chalice, I put it on the table, and I take out the dagger of snakes.
So why don't you remind listeners what you're talking about here?
So the dagger of snakes is a dagger which also deals additional poison damage when it strikes a target. So it does the standard 1d4 of dagger damage plus 1d4 of poison damage. And the chalice of healing, I believe we said it doubles the effect of potions.
It improves their condition for sure.
Improves the condition, yeah. So I look at him and I kind of look at him like, a deal will not be struck with us. You have information we need, and we're gonna get this out of you one way or another.
Hey, this is Adam, and I'm just popping in to say thanks for listening to Down to the Dice. If you like what you hear so far, don't forget to subscribe and please leave a review in your podcast app because it helps other people to find the show too. Also, it would mean so much to me and the guys if you told a friend about our podcast face to face. We're going to get back to the show in just a second, but first, I want to let you know that this week's episode of Down to the Dice is brought to you by Francie Planet and his first ever release, Storyboards, which features neither Master nor demos, but stripped down acoustic work tapes. Each one of these whimsical narrative songs feels like a trip to Blockbuster with clever, candid lyrics rolling like subtitles in a Spielberg flick. Find Storyboards by Francie Planet wherever you get your music and be an active protagonist in your own story. All right, that's all from me. Let's get back to the show. He looks... Give me an intimidation check.
Gordon knows something's going on, so he starts sprinting for that potion.
This goes up with a power driver. Boom!
You promised, Ethan.
He knows something's going on, but he still, as a man of his word, will not come back without a potion.
I'm going to use that. I want to use the inspiration point. Now, is that a reroll or is that adding
a D6? Reroll.
Okay. Excellent. It is a 15.
Okay.
Nice, man.
His eyes go wide. As he kind of begins to discern, you know, the situation he's in, this thick-set dwarf with the high voice, and he says, listen. And as you begin to take a step closer, you hear pounding upstairs as Gorin is running to his room to get like his stuff. But then you feel a soft hand touch your back.
Oh.
And as you turn, you are looking down at Istrabel. And she says, Aven, I don't want to torture him like this.
Said anything about you torturing him?
She says, Aven, as your contractor, I don't want you to hurt him. Lock him up and bring him to my dad. He knows how to get the information out of him.
Aven looks at her and he's like, I've done this before when I had to go and deal with poachers to find out where they were taking their prey or where they had taken live animals. I've used this method before. I will get the information we need from him.
And she says,
Aven.
She says,
sick.
I don't doubt that, but I'm asking you, it's just too much for one night.
Aven looks at her and is like, you are far too naive and benevolent to the kind of underworld that sits here in front of you. And they will try to take advantage of this one day. But today, he gets to live without any pain. Today.
And her serious look melts away into like the biggest childish smile. And she says, thank you, Aven. And she leans up and she kisses your cheek. And then she says, okay, lock him up and let's rechart our course because we definitely probably lost charter. And she turns and she begins to run upstairs.
And I'm at the door. Here's your potion.
Thanks. I sigh and I'm like, I guess we won't be needing it tonight.
I can still drink it.
This one's been spared some pain.
Oleg, I can feel your pain, man.
But I look at Gorin and I go, and I sort of lean into him and go, when the Justicars need to pull a confession from a guilty person, how do they get it?
Your God, baby.
Well, perhaps you should pray with this one then. And I pick up the dagger and I pick up the chalice and I leave after Istrabel.
Can I just say that scene with Aven saying, one day this is going to come back to bite you? I feel like that's the clip that, like, 8 seasons from now, it's going to be like previously and down to the dice. And you were going to hear that clip and be like, man, where was that from?
If,
like,
it's 8 seasons from now, I will be the master of long game. That's for sure. And Gorin, you are alone with this cultist.
Oh, I bring him up to where we need to go. I have no more words for him.
Do you bring him to the top deck? And is it safe to presume you tie him up with the cultist?
Yep.
Okay, you guys have a nice little collection growing of captives. You got a thin cultist and then a dwarf. You have to tie him up on something lower so that his feet aren't completely free hanging. And you guys are all up on the deck now.
DM, throughout our conversation between Strawn and Connie and the cultist, I would like to ask Connie, if I can. All right, listen, down below when you were taking care of other problems, did you manage to see if the Flodium's all right? Did it get tampered with?
As far as I could tell, I think the Flodium was fine. I just, like, I sensed somebody, like, breaking in through the boiler room, engine room, Flodium room, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But I don't, as far as I could tell at the time, I don't think anybody was tampering with it. But maybe it's smart to double check.
You got this guy?
Yeah, I can hang out, because I feel like you probably have a better handle on Flodium than I do, so...
Oh, well, I don't know about that, mate, but yeah, I'll be back real quick. Save me some wine. And DM, I just not wanting to take more than 2 minutes. I want to go down there. If I see any open hatches or loose straps or whatever, I would just like to double check that it's all in order.
Okay, you climb down the stairs. You see a bunch of open doors and where Beethoven had come from. You pass by Beethoven's room. You see a dead bandit in there that he had disposed of. As you make it down to the bottom of the deck, the chilling thought enters your mind that, OMG, you guys never took Stella's body out of storage. But as you continue to go down to the quote unquote engine room, you open that door and you hear as the trap door underneath is open. And you do see the 4 pieces of Flodium in their respective corners attached to their chassis with these little brushes that kind of cue them up to pull in different directions. And they look all right.
I glance very briefly down the trap door opening. Trying very hard not to look down at the core, but just to make sure we don't have any ropes or anything flapping in the wind. And then I would like to close the doors.
The trap doors?
Yeah.
Okay. You shut them. As you do, you feel a sudden, all too familiar, scratching, itching sensation on your skin. It rakes over your hands, your palms. Wow. Ripples up your elbows and then up all the way down your spine, and you suddenly get lightheaded as you stumble back and you feel your back hit against the door frame, and as you blink, your eyes open and you see a different place. Wow. You see a flat plane of dark gray stone that is covered on the top with pulsing raw crystals of Flodium, and buried deep inside that Flodium, you see a black, pitch black obelisk, a large prism that looks like it goes up 20 feet of just sheer black glass, and it cracks into a million pieces. And the moment it does, you see your face reflected in every single one of those cracks, and it's looking right into your eyes, except the faces that you're looking at are decomposing. Your teeth and gums are exposed from your decayed lips, and you see wide eyes, and they say, "Stay away!" And you blink, and you are back in the engine room.
Well. Oh.
This is me talking, not Avon. I really hope that you say this to me at some point.
Nah. All right.
DM, I kind of come to and I kind of put my hands over my body and I check. I look at my skin and I stand up and I kind of shake my head and I kind of say, I open my mouth to speak reassuringly to myself, but I don't know what to say. I double check that the hatch is closed and locked, and I kind of knuckle, like tap with my knuckles one of the pieces of machinery holding in the flodium, trying to simulate a semblance of normalcy. And on my way out back towards Connie, and I guess the group ascending the stairs, I look at this dead body. You said that's in Beethoven's room. Is Beethoven around?
No, he's made his way up to the top deck as well.
I grab the dead body, trying not to get as much blood on me as I can, and I bring it up to the top.
Okay. You see that two very professional stab wounds, one down the collarbone and one through underneath the left armpit, both heart stabs, almost with perfect precision are in this thing. A testament to Beethoven's skill. And blood all over the floor, very fast bleeding spots, and you bring him up to the deck.
Okay. And as we ascend, I bring him and I don't care if anyone can see me or not. I rest his body kind of on the rail of the ship, and I would quickly like to go over him for tattoos or loot.
Okay, you find an old chipped cutlass and a pouch with like two silver pieces.
Okay, I keep those. I'm also looking for any distinguishing marks that would betray this guy's origins or affiliations. But if I don't see any, I would like to hold him so that it looks like I'm about to toss him over the edge.
Okay.
And I say,
well, first, you do find a couple of tattoos on his body. One on his left bicep, okay, that says evil is good. And then the one on the right side that says crime for life.
Nice. Nice. Okay. I chuckle wryly to myself and I just say, we don't need any more zombies, right? With all luck. And I launch him overboard.
And he falls down to the core.
DM, as a question, does the ship's gravity catch him and swing him back up onto the deck?
He's too heavy, but he slightly sways and then breaks free.
That's funny. Just keeps looping around.
Oh, we got a satellite. You guys are all on the deck. Is there anything you guys want to discuss all together?
DM, I would like to talk to the crew briefly, but do I know offhand how long it is until we get back to the Nightgrounds estate?
You're going to get there in like 5 hours.
Okay. Guys, I know we're exhausted. Some of us have taken our beatings there. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I really think we should take 5 minutes or like 30 seconds, and we should really hammer out what we know. I've been thinking a lot about this, right? I kind of gesture for the guys to leave the cultist and the bandit out of earshot. Like,
yeah, we'll say that you guys go to the front of the ship, and for sake of simplicity, unless you guys want otherwise, Beethoven and Istrabel go down to sleep because they're quite, frazzled.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, okay.
Guys, I've been thinking about this.
Thinking about what?
Goran, the day that Beethoven almost got wiped out, you found a cloak with all the congregants, right? With everyone gathered there?
A cloak?
That's what tipped us off that someone was hiding. A snake was in the nest.
Goran scratches his brain. Couple question marks pop. Ah, yes, I do remember that. That was at the inauguration. No?
Yeah,
inauguration. Yeah, two minutes.
Inauguration. Right. Inauguration.
Those big words hurt Goran's mind.
Big word hurt brain.
Yeah. And I turn to Connie and I say,
wait, would Goran like put two and two together now that that was said? Because if I'm being honest, I totally forgot I found that.
So this is actually a great D&D mechanic that we can talk about. So a lot of people think when their character has low intelligence, like a low intelligence score, that they're unable to put obvious information together, like what like their player would be able to. But unless the player is using meta information, like he's inserting information into the character that the character wouldn't know, whatever the player can deduce, your character can deduce. What intelligence affects is their ability to recall information that they've learned before, like in history books, in medicine books, herbal history. But low intelligence doesn't mean that you're not able to think critically or anything like that.
Okay. Cool.
So then could I roll to see if there's like, if that cloak looked like the one that the other cultists had?
I think it happened just a few days ago. I think.
Well, you know what, guys? We know that it doesn't look like the cultist cloak. We know that it looks exactly like the cloaks that we were given that day. And I say as much. I say, and that cloak you found, Goran, matched the cloaks that we were given. Which means, and Connie, the guard that you took out was already in the building. I'm convinced that cloak was how he snuck in. If he had a copy, for lack of a better term, of that cloak, it means that he had an in. And he chose not to kill Beethoven in privacy where success was all but guaranteed. Why did he do that? Listen, there was a sniper with Connie, not associating you, Connie, but you stopped one. There was a backup escape guy hiding in the trees that Goran took out after I helped. And Ivan, you were there and you stopped Stella. That's three attempts on Beethoven's life. But they could have done it guaranteed in privacy. But they chose to make the attempt in public at a public event like an inauguration. I really don't think that these guys are after the Night Crown's genealogy. I think they're after the Night Crown's business. I think they wanted to spray down.
Goran just stares with a puzzled face.
So what I'm saying is that I think all that attempts on Beethoven's life was all an effort to spray doubt into the mind of the public about the future of the Night Crown's business. I think that's why they brainwashed Stella as an in, as a backup plan. And I think they were using an op- like, we know all this, but Stella was researching something that could compete with Flodium or enhance Flodium, and they were using that to get close enough to hurt the Night Crowns.
Well, they are influential. They do have wealth. So business could be a very opportune moment.
I think more than just, well, it's power that they hold.
But then why would they...
So it makes sense.
I guess that makes sense then why they would try to kidnap Istrabel to have power over their family, because the Stellas are no longer around.
Especially if she was next in line, no?
I tap my forehead and I walk a few steps DM toward the bandit and I say, not to the bandit, Beethoven's downstairs. I say, did anyone know if they tried to take Beethoven? Hey, brute! I walk over to the bandit and I say,
yeah.
Why did you want the girl, mate? I'm not messing around, buddy.
Listen. We received a message in the middle of the night. Told us that we'd find the ship somewhere on this way and to take the girl. Said not to mess with you guys.
Listen, mate. I'm about to take you on a personal tour of the core. Unless you tell me who sent you that message.
Intimidation check.
Man, somebody help me! Come on, guys!
I fold my arms behind. No, I'm listening.
I'll give you advantage on this.
I'm just making sure you don't do anything silly.
I think the rest of the team there, his situation, I'll give you advantage.
We're all helping.
Please, thank you so much.
Because he got a one with that facial expression.
Three!
My favorite number. Yeah. That's good for something.
He says, listen, with that guy there, and he gestures to Goran, he says, you can't do nothing to me.
Avon looks at Goran, he's like, can you turn around
I
for
beg
a second?
Your, I hear that. I beg your pardon.
What are you going to do?
What do you mean, what am I going to do?
You holy man.
Again?
You had me alone, you wouldn't question me? Come on.
I had different questions for you, tough guy.
All right. And then he looks at you, Tron, and he says, try. Do it!
Untie him. Let's see how tough he really is.
Avon looks around for Istrabel to see if he has to fulfill this promise.
I'm bothered now. I walk up to him with like a slight growl in my voice.
Is Gorn bothered or is Ryan bothered?
Are you talking? No, Gorn's bothered. Yeah. Did he strike my ego or Gorn's?
For a second, Gorn's face, and then Ryan takes over his body.
With like a slight growl in my voice, I walk over to him pointing at him until it's like right in his chest. I'm poking at him. And I said, I had different questions for you than what my friend has for you right now. So if you want to be disrespectful and not answer, future, they could go one of two ways. I said I would see that you see a fair trial. I can't tell you what he's going to do to you.
Can Aven try to...
Roll intimidation.
You are the man. And distantly in the back of Sean's mind, he recognizes Thorin sees me as a friend.
Right.
We're pals. Can Aven try to help?
Oh, I don't even need to know what my modifier is.
Okay.
I think it's a dirty 21. Let me double check.
I thought you didn't need to know the modifier.
But I don't... Yeah, we're not friends anymore, so... It's a 21.
Okay.
It's a 21.
He suddenly balks. He starts leaning away, and he says, Listen, I'm sorry.
Say it!
I'm sorry. It's been a bad day.
Now look at him and apologize, and I point to Sean.
Thorin, it's all right, mate. I've had...
No, it's not all right. He doesn't get to try and steal from this ship.
Not to mention kidnapping.
Try and take... Yeah, a young lady hostage, and you get to come in here and tell us how we're going to run this? No.
If Goran ever takes a look at the bandit, I'm kind of doing one of those like, hey, it's okay, no big deal. I need a bigger person.
And he says, listen, I'm sorry. Listen, to be frank, I saw your tattoo. I know that you serve a god of justice. Letting your buddy rough me up doesn't seem very just. Maybe that tattoo doesn't mean anything.
Well, maybe it does, and maybe you just need to answer the question. Did you think about that?
Aven wants to chime in right here when he says that he knows that paladins wouldn't do anything, and wants to say, I once heard in my travels that the paladins of Solaris used hot coals and hot iron pokers for penance. Is this true? And I look at Goran.
Ooh.
I kind of look at him.
Every day?
I don't know. But... DM, do I know this?
I think he's trying to make up a lie to intimidate this guy.
Yes, very much so.
And things go over Gorn's head. Okay, so he looks at him.
No.
Aven, what are you talking about?
I look at him like, threaten him with pain.
The dialogue time box on this is being run out.
And he may be more susceptible to giving us information.
The bandit says, all right, I'll talk. If I give you information, will you at least plead for a lighter sentence for me?
Yes. I will stand trial with you, and I'll make sure you get what you deserve.
We received a message, and it was like magic. We all heard a voice. There's this orb that appeared and spoke to us. Some kind of spell. It told us the quadrants, to the coordinates to find you, and it said when we did, there'd be hell of a payday.
But was it for the Flodium or anything else on board, or was it for the girl?
The girl, man.
But not for the other ranger, the human one.
No.
Man, Shran rubs his hand through his hair, avoiding his antlers, and lets out an exasperated sigh. Says, somebody watch these guys, I'm going to bed. We gotta get our rest.
I agree. Who's taking first watch? Or do we need to take watch?
Yeah, we'll say Conroy and Aven. Do you guys take watch together?
I was watching when the top pirates attacked, so I think it's my turn to not watch.
Okay.
I'll stay up.
Okay, we'll say that Aven goes to sleep beside... Aven, do you want to go to bed or you want to stay up?
Aven, I'll stay up.
Okay. Conroy, Sean, you guys go to bed without incident. Aven and Goran, do you guys want to talk about anything?
So I look at Goran and I ask him, like,
wait, is the criminal still here, or are we like in a separate room? We're gonna
say they're both tied up, and the helm has been set to kind of auto steer, and you guys are up at like the fake helm at the front.
So I actually, I ask Goran, like, I look at Goran, I'm like, so what do you actually do with prisoners? Like, just tie them up, or do you not ask them for confession or to seek penance for their crimes?
Goran, like, not defeated, but kind of like hunched over.
Or was that not part of your job?
My job was just to, they see justice.
Perhaps it's the ones you take them to then that would do that kind of.
And it's not fair. I see heinous crimes and I walk in on bloodbaths, murdered children, families lost. And all I do is take them to a judge. Watch them smile while they walk past me, knowing they'll never get in trouble. It's not enough.
Then perhaps it's the ones on the other end after the trial is done that need to provide those kinds of services.
But I just am told who to take them to. I follow the contract. I do everything I'm told. I live through Solaris, and I see no change in this world. It's dark.
I look him in the eyes and I say, perhaps you should allow Solaris to do more of his bidding through you. Instead of these contracts that you take.
I think you're right.
Perhaps you should meditate on that.
And I do. But I can tell you one thing, I get no answer. Just silence and me thanking this god for such power I have, but...
Eamon stops, like, is just in his own mind, thinks for a moment, and he thinks the best times that he feels that when he meditates is when he's in, within nature because of the way that he was brought up. And he looks at Gorin and goes, perhaps you need to be associated with something with what represents Solaris to best commune with him. Whether it be temple or whatever elemental forces he beckons.
Not a bad idea. It'd be nice to get answers once in a while.
And I look at him like, what elemental force does he represent? I mean, Solaris, one would think the sun, but...
Yeah, but I only really pray in my room at night after I just reflect on the day in the moonlight.
Perhaps
might be onto something.
Perhaps you need something different, like a flame.
And I pat him on the back. Thanks, Eamon. That was pretty cool.
And man. The scale about to tip to a point of inspiration. No, guys, that was sick. Both of you guys get a point of inspiration.
Yeah, all right.
Nice. Oh, sweet.
Love,
nice,
that, love that role play. Wow, powerful stuff. The night goes on. All of you throughout the night get a long rest.
Woohoo! Nice.
As you wake up, Eamon and Gorin, you guys are replaced by Istrabel and Beethoven. They go up there. And they actually bring you a coffee, for each of you. And they say you go take a little bit of a nap for the last leg of the trip. And they stay up there and they converse quietly amongst themselves. And you guys all come to the surface as a big bell chimes. Ding, 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 ding. Saying that you guys are going to be feeling gravity changes soon. As you guys see the floating skyland on which New Keflin lies. And as you guys get to the deck, you see sprawling out as far as you can see land. And now that you are over this land, it is so easy to forget that this thing is floating in the sky. Because everywhere you look, you see rolling plains, clouds. It looks so natural. You're still flying extremely high. You see the land sprawling, but you can't see the core. And that little bit of nervousness, that weight on your stomach that you feel when you feel when you can sense the core directly beneath you is gone. And you slowly feel gravity begin to shift as the ship aligns itself to be parallel with the floor of the skyland. And before long, you see a small plume of smoke and then you see another. It's probably around 10 in the morning as you begin to descend onto the Night Grounds estate. All of you give me a perception check.
Man, for some reason, guys, this is the roll. This, I just got a feeling.
I got a two, so sorry to kill the mood there.
12.
Boy, actually a modified one. How does that, because I got a two, but my perception is minus one.
You're fine. You're going, oh, cool. At least begin to change.
Can I use my passive perception instead?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, why not?
Then it's a 13.
So someone on our TikTok recently complained about one of my videos like, and was like, you can't roll below your passive perception, which
maybe that's not.
But because of that, because of engaging on TikTok this one time, I'll allow you to use your passive perception. What everyone else get?
Me too, then.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
12. So I have a 13.
Okay.
And a 12. Okay.
16.
All right.
17, DM.
17. Okay. You guys notice that things look regular as usual. Sean, you notice right away in the front long driveway where there's trees carved out in beautiful designs. There's large courtrooms with like marble. You all saw this as you got to the estate way back in episode one. But where there's a clearing for carriages to park and for small skyships to land, much more rare, you do see three or four small carriages parked there with horses tied to pickets. And you do see one large, not large, but one very nice barge skyship in that driveway. And Gorin, with your 12, you recognize that barge as a paladin transportation vessel for prisoner cargo in the driveway.
And we're at the Night Grounds?
You are just beginning to land in that same driveway.
DM,
could that be for him?
I'm not the only one who notices this massive airship.
No, you notice it first. We all notice it? If the lowest everyone got was a 12, I'd say you all notice it, but you notice it when you're low enough that it's obvious that you're landing.
Do I recognize
the associations.
Give me a history check. In fact, that nat 20 is so powerful it spills over to Goran. He would recognize this. Both of you recognize it. This is an extremely expensive ship. Thick iron plates all over it, extremely heavy. You know immediately that the flotium in it has to be extremely strong to carry this lead truck. This is the barge of the Sequester. The Sequester is an elite level paladin. Goran, you would have heard of him. In fact, there is you have ties to him back in your prologue. He is one of the people who signed the document that you have. Sean, you recognize it because the Sequester is a very powerful paladin. But you've never met him.
Out of curiosity, is this like Goran's boss?
You don't know.
I'm a rogue agent. I'm a contractor, dude.
As soon as I see that ship, DM, I would like to casually walk up to Istrabel and Beethoven, who I'm assuming are kind of steering this thing, and I say, I hope you two know that as much as we were protecting you, you guys protected us. You guys are the real deal.
And Beethoven says, well, of course, Sean. You know, we took our lickings, but, you know, we got through, took down some dragons. That's pretty good. And Istrabel says, hey, Sean, you're right. Hey, we made it. We got information. I mean, our dad's going to be pissed at us for, especially for me, for sneaking off. But hey, like, we got the information. Beethoven, like, he's alive. He doesn't have to know any of this. Why do you look so worried?
I just realized that your dad's going to be pretty upset that we didn't turn around and bring you guys back. But Beethoven, and I tap him on the shoulder and I say, I'm glad I was there to save your life.
Well,
and Istrabel, I know I was giving you a hard time before, but you probably saved ours too.
Jake, what's your persuasion modifier? I'm going to roll for you here.
I plead the fifth on this one, D.
Fine, you can roll. Hey, Jake, roll persuasion.
6.
All right. Beethoven smiles at you and he says, listen, Sean, we're going to pay you. Don't worry. And you see smoke begin to as your ship gets lower and lower, and you guys land your ship.
Avon walks over to Istrabel and just kind of looks at her. He's like, so why are you going to talk to your dad?
Knowing my dad, if the Sequester's here, my dad's going to play it cool. Reputation's a big thing in the Nightgrounds game. But as soon as he leaves, boy, am I going to get a talking to. And Beethoven says, you said it, sis. Well, let's get the service and begin unloading all this. I don't want to do it.
So I look at Istrabel and I'm like, so I'm really glad it was Beethoven's idea for you to come along.
He says, no, I didn't know that she was going to do that.
That's good.
You guys hear the as the ramp at the bottom of the ship opens up StarCraft style. Do you guys walk out? What do you guys do?
Yeah, as like nonchalantly but eager, Goran walks out with a bit of haste. He wants to go over to the ship to see if he's paying a visit, if he's doing his job. Right. What's going on?
Calling down to Goran. Maybe we should take the prisoners with you.
Yeah, I grab one.
Which one?
How many are there? There's all three.
One actually, cultist yeah, and one I, bandit.
Yeah.
One on each shoulder?
I grab one. I want to grab one.
Which one?
I take the cultist because it's smaller. Okay, I take the
weaker one.
Dwarf. Conroy and Avon, what are you guys doing?
I say to the group, so are we, what's the plan? Are we going to meet up with Futessen or what are we doing right now?
Well, Avon, does any of us actually remember that we still have the body in the of Stella?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. No, for okay. sure we do. For
so,
sure we
so
do.
Yeah. So Avon mentions, you know, one of us should probably take Stella from cold storage back so they can give him a proper funeral.
Thanks for volunteering. What are we doing right now? Are we going to meet Futessen? What are we doing?
I turn to you, Connie, and I say, you know, that's a good point. There's no doubt that Futessent and Emery are going to be livid with us because in some way they are going to hold us responsible for Istra being here. And look at the state of this sky vessel. It's been rocked. And I know that Beethoven and Istra, you guys are going to... Are they with us?
Yeah. No. Do you know what? They're getting their stuff loaded up.
Okay. I know that the kids are going to try to defend us.
and we're gonna get paid, hopefully. But we gotta remember, we got nothing to hide. We did our best, we protected them, we got a lead, we got two leads. We gotta stay united. I think we're all gonna go down there. I'm sure Futescent is gonna be waiting at the landing pad for us. So there's nothing we can do until we've spoken to him. It's in the morning. He'll know we have rested. There's nothing we can do but face it head on.
I concur.
Well, what do you want to do, Connie?
I just want to get paid.
Yes.
Great.
All right.
You guys all stand on the edge of the ship, maybe like 20 feet up. And it's clear that the ship, after you guys unload everything close to the house, it's going to be brought back into that giant silo or that giant barn. Like structure, Sean, you would have seen this. Your ship, the Big Daddy Getaway, is stored in there too. But before that, it's here so that everything's getting loaded off. As you guys look out, before you see anyone, you hear this ping, ping, ping. And as you look out, maybe like 45 feet to the left, right over a little clearing of bushes, you see Emery and Futescent wearing polos and shorts. And they are playing tennis. And ping, ping. And Emery wipes his forehead and he looks very spry, Futescent, still very healthy, but doesn't have the youth of a half elf. He's doing his best to keep up and they laugh. And as they see you all looking there, they wave and smile and then they keep playing and they beckon you guys to come over.
This can't be good.
I tap Goran on the shoulder consolingly and I say, that fair trial of yours is going to be hard to get, mate.
If it even happens at all.
Hey, this is Adam, and I want to say thanks again for listening to Down to the Dice. If you like what you hear, please do not forget to subscribe, leave a review in your podcast app, and tell a friend about the show too. And hey, if you really want to support us, there's a link to our Patreon in the show notes where you can hear bonus episodes, including the prologues for all of our characters, and some pre-scatter episodes too. Down to the Dice is brought to you by our editor, Francie, at Hello Francie Sound and Story. You can find him on Instagram for all your sound design and podcast editing needs. And fun fact, Francie is also the singer of our theme song, and if you like that, you should really check out his brand new artist project, Francie Planet, wherever you get your music. Finally, speaking of music, our show's tunes are composed by our very own Jake Joseph, who plays Sean Degoni, with some exceptions, whose credits can be found in the show notes too. All right, that's all from me. Thanks again for listening to Down to the Dice. Let's roll that outro music. We're gonna set it off, time to step in.